Welcome to episode 7, part 1 of the One Mason Road Camp Tevye podcast. I'm Rob Goodwin. Jeff Blasbog has been on the Cohen Camp's board for 3 years. He also leads the Community and Engagement Committee. His first year as a camper was 1985, which was actually my last year at camp. Welcome, Jeff. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate this.
Sure thing. So tell our listeners and viewers a bit about your position on the Cohen Camp's board.
Yeah, I mean, there's no actual like assigned positions. The board members all come from a different variety of, professional capacities. Frankly, I don't know what my strength or my professional capacity is, and the reason why, I was selected for the board. But I could tell you how I got there, and maybe that could provide some color as to kind of why I was selected or asked to be on the board. And just before we get started, Rob, you mentioned your last year at Tevye was my first year. Do you remember me?
Oh, definitely.
I was 8.
You don't remember? You remember me though?
Of course I do. I have maybe a memory that stands out, and it wasn't any individual person. It was I don't know if you remember, you weren't allowed to chew gum at camp. I remember I was chewing gum, of course, and one of the head counselors was walking by, and I quickly spit out the gum to avoid being seen with it. Of course, it was there on the ground, so I put my foot on it to avoid it being seen. And of course, I got gum all over my shoe, and that was my core memory for my 1985 summer.
Is that the worst thing you did?
Probably that summer, yeah. If that stands out. So if that was the worst, Then that's not so bad. So anyway, this is kind of rewind back to like 2021, when one of my best friends from camp, Michael Jesser, who had been with me throughout Tevye, my Tel Chai, and as a counselor, he actually passed away after a long battle with cancer. And Michael was this larger-than-life persona. Not just physically, he was a big, tall, athletic build, but he was also this large, soft teddy bear of a person. Really, one of the most likable and inclusive people you'd ever meet. Like, he didn't have anyone say a bad word about him. And nobody loved Tevye more than Michael. So when he passed, we knew we had to honor him and, memorialize him at Tevye somewhere at camp. And so what better place to do that than the Boak Field, where not only did he dominate on the softball field, but also that's, the place where the rope is burned at the end of Color War. It culminates the entire camp celebrating, whether you win or lose, it's everyone's celebrating when their rope breaks, right? So we had a small committee, maybe 3 or 4 of us, that started raising funds, not only to rename the field in his memory, but to kind of beautify it, revitalize it, et cetera. And now that field, I don't know if you've been back to Tevye recently, it has that big sign on the back, the Michael Jesser Boak Field. And the money that we raised was able to replace the old bleachers, improve the grass in the infield. There's a shed that's now behind the backstop where they serve ice cream treats, a plaque with Michael's story on it. And then there's still funds that continue to raise money there for future upkeep of the field. So, long story short, my involvement in that fundraise was kind of recognized and, I guess, observed by some of the folks at the Cohen camps. And so they asked me in early 2022 if I wanted to join what was then a combined committee for community engagement and development and fundraising. And so at that time, mostly what that committee did was we supported the fundraising efforts of the Cohen camps at large. We made a lot of thank you calls to recent donors. We reached out to donors who had maybe given in prior years, but maybe hadn't given in a while, like stuff like that. So then fast forward to 2023, after about a year of being in that committee, and Jonathan Cohen reached out and asked if I would consider joining the board, which I accepted. So I've been a board member ever since then. And now that combined committee that I had originally joined is actually split up into 2 different committees. One that's focused solely on fundraising and development. And then the one that I kind of head up is more focused on community engagement. And that boils down to trying to keep the Cohen camps at the forefront of the minds of alumni, parents, spouses of alumni, friends, grandparents. And we have about, a small army of like 20 to 30 people representing all 3 camps, representing a variety of age groups, camp generations. And we try to put on, events or gatherings. I think I tried to get you to come on to join the committee at one point. But we, we organize the major camper unions that happen every 5 years, the alumni Shabbats, which are every year between those reunions. And then, in the past couple of years, we've put on some other events. In 2024, I organized the first ever Cohen Camps golf tournament. And we just had the second one this past October. And each of those tournaments raised over $25,000 for the Cohen Camps. And we had about 100 people between the golfers and non-golfers attending each of those events. Save the date
Great.
For 2026, Monday, October 19th.
Monday, October 19th. Okay.
I was going to say the other big event that we just did a few weeks ago, we had our first ever professional networking event. We had about, I think we had like 60 to 70 people gather in Newton. We had a panel of alumni, again, representing all three camps from a variety of industries, kind of shared their career journeys and with the impact of camp, how the impact of camp had on their personal and professional development.
Very good. Very good. If we can go back to the board for just a second, can you say like what some of the priorities are right now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Of the board?
I mean, the number one priority is sustainability of the camps from a financial perspective. And that is and will be the primary priority of the board, probably for the ongoing future. I think, you know, one thing that people might not know, and I think it goes back to when it was called like the Cohen Foundation, is I think people
right.
assume that there was this endowment and this pile of money that kind of sustained the camps, but there is no endowment. I think the Cohen Foundation, if I remember correctly, I think the Cohen camps used to give money to various Jewish institutions and to Israel. And those ended many years ago to make sure that the funds actually went back into camp operations and into the camp facilities, but they didn't change the name until much more recently. So, you know, there is a small reserve built up for capital projects, for operating losses, et cetera, but not nearly enough to guarantee the sustainable long-term future. What happened was everything was hunky-dory and the camps were full and camps were making money until COVID hit. And then obviously with COVID, there were still expenses, but with no revenue coming in, that was a big hit on that kind of pool of money. And then camps in general, not just the Cohen camps, but summer camps and Jewish camps in general, never fully recovered from COVID. I think what people found other things to do, families went on other vacations, and even those people who come back to camp, maybe they're not going full summer anymore. Maybe they're going one session. So the camps are not full, and the costs since COVID have risen dramatically. Tuition has not increased anywhere near the rate as the expenses. And so you have this gap that really can only be filled with philanthropy and donations. And so that's, you know, something that I think the board is going to be focused on is potentially trying to create an endowment or do something to kind of bridge that gap.
The issues pertaining to a lower enrollment after COVID, did that also impact the amount of staff that, you know, that would be interested in working at camp or they kind of did that start prior?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that there's been a decline in interested staff. I think that it's been hard to retain homegrown staff for a number of reasons. I think that there's this pressure that exists, and I don't think it comes from parents, but I think that it comes from the kids themselves as they reach that age to have a quote-unquote real job or an internship. And
right.
that pressure, I don't know if it existed when you and I or counselors. I know it didn't exist for me. I had no desire to have an internship until after I graduated college and
no,
get a real job. But until then, like it was the summer came and I wanted to work at camp and I wanted to be with my friends. And now when they reach a certain, I think it's like after year two or three of being a counselor, okay, now we don't go back. Now we go find internships or other, you know, other things. And so that's been certainly a challenge. And so, you know, the camps do have, you know, foreign staff that they bring in. And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a counselor, you're exactly right. I mean, I didn't feel the pressure to do an internship or get a real job at all, you
yeah.
know. And so I was there until my senior year of college, except for
yeah.
one summer.
Yeah, my last summer was between my junior and senior year of college. So my daughter right now is a sophomore in college. She was at camp up until this past summer. And none of her friends of that age group are planning on going back to camp. I think they feel that their time is done, and they're moving on. And that's unfortunate. Again, that pressure's not coming from me. I would love for her to have another summer at Tevye, but the fact is, if her friends aren't going back, she's not going to go back. You know.
Right. Right. And what about like I know now like the idea of having a department head at age 20 or 21 doesn't happen anymore. Is it that you're the counselors can't really aspire to that kind of leadership role anymore. Because we looked at our counselors, at least I did, that became department heads and kind of emulated them. You know, I wasn't trained on how to be head of athletics, but we did it, but today I know that's not possible.
Well, I don't know that it's not possible. I think that it's just the kids that are homegrown kind of leave after a certain time. And so they don't, they don't have that opportunity because they're not there anymore, really.
Right, right.
And you're right. There are more. And I don't know if it's department heads or just in general, but there's a lot more adult staff at camp. And yeah. I think that comes from the world that we live in today with, a lot more lawsuits and helicopter parents and you need more insurance and the security concerns. And you see the adult staff at camp has kind of grown out of that kind of just way of the world, really.
Right. And as I understand, I mean, the ACA has put forth rules in terms of average age of staff, which is different from X number of decades ago. Right. So that kind of makes it a little different.
I don't know about you might be right. I'm just not aware of that. I do know that in New Hampshire specifically for Tevye and for Telnor, only a certain number of staff can be under the age of 18.
Right.
And that's
right.
Existed kind of forever. And like when you and I were younger, at least when I was, in Tel High and then a CIT, it was, will you get asked back? Won't you get, will you not get asked back? And there was a lot of pressure to kind of behave and perform and be a good CIT and be a good, Tel High camper. And because you wanted to get asked back because there was a limit to that number of spots that they could offer to be a counselor because a junior counselor was not 18. And when they created that kind of Kadima year 4 years ago or so, that kind of removed that pressure because they could bring everyone back for Kadima. And then the year after, when you're a counselor, there's no age restriction. Everyone can be hired. Well, now they're going back. They're combining Kadima back with Dor Lador, and they're making JCs that same age that we were when we were JCs.
Okay.
So that pressure is going to come back in a little bit because they are limited in how many staff members they can hire at that age. Pembroke right. doesn't have that problem because that law doesn't exist in Massachusetts.
I see. Yeah, and if you weren't asked back in the day, as far as the boys, you could work in the kitchen, which I did voluntarily because I skipped my CIT year. But, that was the other option.
And that was a lot more common. I think that there's this kind of stigma that I don't know if it was back then or not, but like if you didn't get asked back and you work in the kitchen, well, you were less than. And I don't think anyone else saw that that way, but I think some people did.
Well, that's not that. That wouldn't be a fair representation, at least not from my experience back then. That's not a fair representation at all.
Right. I think some people like yourself probably wanted to go work in the kitchen and it was a more fun way to experience camp.
No.
No? No. Okay. Fair enough.
No. No. Not at all.
But I don't think I don't think now they want children. And again, even though they're on staff, let's be honest, like they're children, to be working in the kitchen anymore. I don't think that's like even an opportunity.
Really? They're missing out.
I know. I mean, if I wasn't allowed to be back at camp for whatever reason, as a staff member or as a bunk counselor, I'd want any way to get back there, mm-hmm. any way I can.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're definitely right. And so I imagine the board is with the international staff. They made a lot of investments in staff development and also health and wellness, as you kind of pointed out in today's world.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot more training, a lot more, you have to check a lot more boxes, I guess, to become a staff member. And I honestly don't even think it's that different from what we were when we were counselors. It's probably just more formalized, right?
There seem to be more activities off season as well to get the staff prepared, especially what the international folks.
Well, I think it goes back to wanting to keep camp at the forefront of people's mind in general.
Right.
And so it's not just for staff members. It's also for like the community and the campers. I think all of the camps, and it's partly a recruiting and marketing effort, but part, and a retention effort is to make sure that people are constantly thinking about camp. constantly have camp on their mind. Any opportunity that we can get to bring people together with camp at the foreground, we will take it, and we try to keep, you know, keep camp on people's minds throughout the year, not just in the summer.
And across the three camps, there have been many infrastructure improvements over the years. What are some of the ones that stand out in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, at Tevye, certainly, I think you can walk around camp and notice these things. There's the climbing wall that was introduced this past summer. The Bogue Field that I spoke to is definitely looks way nicer than it used to. This summer, they had a complete facelift and revitalization of Elbes. What else? The Phil Dravs, their tennis shed.
Tennis.
Yeah, what else? We got the ropes course. You know, lots been going on, certainly at Tevye. At Tel Nor, they recently redid the chapel, and they have a room, an alumni room, which looks really beautiful, where you walk in and you go in the back, and there's all their, I forget what their version of the Kalenu is called. But they're all out there with a bunch of pictures and everything. And then there's also at Pembroke, there's a bunch of efforts going on as well. I think they just got raised funding to put air conditioning in the dining hall, which is a big fundraise. Pembroke's been doing a lot of stuff over the years.
Interesting. And you know, I remember when there was no Elbes for a couple
Elbes
years.
Elbes was always there, I think, when I was there. Yeah.
It was opened in 1977.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I heard about the improvements they made to the floor and the stage isn't 20 feet tall anymore, 20 feet high anymore.
Natural light coming in when you're in there. Yeah. And even from the outside, they kind of, you know, resurfaced the hall outside. So that green color or whatever is nice. And the grass around it as well. It all looks really good. They did a good job.
I noticed from the pictures that, you know, the changes that were made.
Yeah.
And looks really nice.
And then I think the next major project that all the camps probably want to attack, and this is over, you know, the course of several years, and we'll have to fundraise for it, is the dining halls and the health centers. I think all three camps, those could use some help. And so those are going to be the next major projects that we'll have to get done at some point.
Now, is the health center the infirmary?
Yes. They don't call it the infirmary anymore. They call it the health center.
And has that changed? Was that ever replaced, or that's still the way it was?
So, from what I understand, and from my memory, it's the same building that it was when I was there, from 85 to 96. And it's not a great place to be sick in.
Right.
And there's a lot more leeway these days. I don't say leeway, but like if somebody's really sick, you know, the parents can come pick them up. They come home for a couple of days, they get better, and then they get dropped off. And I think that's something that would never have happened, I think, back in the day, say for like an emergency or anything like that.
Right. I was only in the infirmary once. So it's not fun. It wasn't a fun place. And it was, and that porch was jammed after every evening activity, obviously. I don't know if I assume it still is. I don't know.
I assume so. There's probably more meds now than there ever were. I think that these kids are not, I wouldn't say more medicated, but they're more diagnosed.
Yeah.
But I unfortunately did spend some time in the infirmary, and in fact, my the final social and the final banquet of my Tel Chai summer, I had this growth on my neck that didn't know what it was, and I ended up having to leave camp the day early on my last summer and go have surgery. So that wasn't a great end to my Tel Chai summer, but I recovered and came back strong. My CIT year. You said you skipped your CIT.
I did.
Summer. Was there a, did your age group go to Israel, or was it not an Israel trip that year?
I went, there was an Israel trip, but it was, you know, it was for Beri Tel Chai.
They did
first
it that
month.
Summer. Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't do that, but I went to Israel the following summer with my temple confirmation class. So that would have been my CIT year.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was by the time it was our turn. It would have been the CIT summer that we did that trip, but there was, because of turbulence and violence in Israel at the time, much like in recent history, there was a period of like 6 or 7 years where there was no trip at all, and the CIT just stayed in camp all summer. And it was actually one of my best summers. I'm just like having the freedom, but also some authority, but also, you know, we waited tables, but we had a lot of free time, and it was super fun.
Right. And then as you touched on the Community and Engagement Committee.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess there are many alumni who really aren't in touch. And what's the engagement committee doing to kind of rope people in?
It's hard. It's not an easy task. And if you have any, I'm all ears for it. But like even identifying the people who are out there and want it, like we have email blasts, we have email addresses. But I think if you get an email, like if you're blind copied on an email, maybe you'll read it, maybe you won't. And if you opt out for some reason, we have no way to get in touch with you. So it's not an easy thing. I think a lot of it is word of mouth. And a lot of it is by creating this kind of this committee that represents all three camps, that represents all the different age groups. And we each take responsibility for reaching out to kind of our decade or our kind of group in our camp, in our age group. And we can start building that community back up and getting people to opt back in and bringing people back to the table. But like I said, it's a strong team. It's a lot of team, but it is made up of volunteers and volunteers who have other full-time jobs and responsibilities. And so we're trying. We've had a couple of really successful events, and I think we're going to try to do a couple more each year and try to grow it with each event.
That sounds good. And what other opportunities are there aside from what you had mentioned for people to get involved?
Yeah, great. So obviously the Community Engagement Committee, and that's whether you want to just come and share some ideas or you want to take ownership of, and you have an idea for an event, whether it's an actual physical event, an activity, or if it's like a creative. So you had Lynn Shapiro Eisenstein on your podcast a couple of sessions ago, or a couple of episodes ago. She came to me with an idea for kind of like a coffee table history book. And so we're going to pursue that, and she's going to take ownership and run with it. And we'll support her with whatever kind of either people support that she needs, and we'll see where that goes. So if you have an idea, you want to bring it to fruition, we can serve as that kind of like engine, and we can supply volunteers to help. And then aside from that, if you want to get involved in the development committee, the fundraising committee, there's certainly no limit to how many people we'd have on that committee to help out. And then, at each individual camp, I'm sure there's also opportunities. So again, it's hard. So I'm wearing my Tevye hat physically, but one of the biggest, most difficult parts of joining the board is really taking off the Tevye hat and putting on the Cohen camp hat and not thinking in terms of like Tevye, but thinking in terms of Cohen camps. And I think that as a community, people don't kind of gravitate to the Cohen camps as a, as an entity. You are a Tevye alumni, or you're a Pembroke alumni, or you're a Telnor alumni, or you're a Pembroke parent, or you're a Telnor grandparent. You're not a Cohen camps grandparent. So it's been a difficult kind of challenge to kind of overcome and kind of think about things in terms of Cohen camps and not in terms of each individual camp.
Right, right. And way back when, the fact that there wasn't just one camp was obviously known, and the idea was even we didn't say it to me, the idea of it being three camps was a thing that was respected, it wasn't all, as much as we want to tell people that wasn't true, it wasn't all about Tevye,
right?
Because obviously it was only one camp out of three.
Yes.
I get that totally. Well, this has been a great episode 7, part 1 of the One Mason Road Camp Tevye podcast. Please subscribe because episode 2 with Jeff is coming up next.